if it wasn't for the people.
Actually, I think it would be boring. What would I do?
We did make you feel more or less disconnected. Segway!
We haven't been recording all that, right?
Oh, we have, but that's where what I cut.
Okay, it's all of that needs to be cut, just for the record.
Yeah, there is no uncut version of this that goes out to the world.
Yeah. Also, if you're going to just start recording when you say hello, you should probably give me a heads up.
Okay. Hey, I've got an app on here that just starts recording when I call you.
Okay. Thank you for that. I trust you to still delete.
Right.
Me just kind of talking through my day.
I have a file of, Kyle's addictions and the people he hates is the name of the file.
Or when you decide to blackmail me, yeah. Right.
Because all the things.
It's hard. I try to live my life with the motto that it will be hard to blackmail Kyle.
Yeah.
Let's just embrace my flaws and let people know how dark of a person I am most of the time.
You know, we'll jump into this, but I remember early on being a little infatuated with Mark Driscoll and enjoying his preaching and him talking about how he wanted to live a simple life. Love his wife and have a, he phrased it so well. He's like, he said, I want to have a really boring testimony. I want to die an old man with a boring testimony. I thought that was so great. And I've just watched this whole thing over the last year and been like, man, well, you had one thing to do.
You had one task.
You had one task.
Which, just knowing Mark Driscoll, there seems nothing boring about him.
No, boring is not his.
Well, knowing in the very loose sense of having read a book he once wrote.
Right, you're ahead of me. So, okay, I've got the title, Why We All Feel Disconnected. How's that?
That'll work for me.
Okay. Hey, my name's Chris Morton, coming to you from Austin. What am I saying? Hey, my name's Chris. I don't have my script up. I was trying to do it by memory.
You forgot to do the welcome.
Yeah. Welcome to Tear Gas and Gumdrops. Welcome to Tear Gas and Gumdrops. My name is Chris Morton, coming to you from rainy Austin, Texas.
And my name is Kyle Sapp, coming to you from sunny Antioch, California.
Yeah, I know that the lamest thing you can do when you're trying to connect with people is talk about the weather. But literally, it was 80 degrees yesterday, and it is 50 right now and raining. And I was sweating in shorts yesterday, and it's nuts.
That sounds like good makings for tornadic activity.
Ooh, I hope not.
I don't know if you guys get tornadoes in Austin.
Very rarely. More up towards Oklahoma, so a few hours up from us. I'll tell you what, there's a potential tornado coming in my life, though. I've been reading these rumors that Marvel is going to have a reboot and get rid of the X-Men. Have you seen this?
Yeah, I saw, I haven't done any, major research into it, but I read an article about them starting completely over.
Yeah, well, it's specifically X-Men. they have said they're canceling Fantastic Four for the time being,
they canceled it already.
Yeah, and now they're talking about X-Men, and that just kind of blows my mind. It's just they're making so much money off of the movies that they can afford to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I've been freaking out.
And X-Men was always about outcasts,
yeah,
and how society viewed them. You know, the mutants were always a subtle nod to how the white population of the night when they were created mm-hmm. treated African Americans mm-hmm. and Asian Americans.
Mm-hmm.
And now that we become far more inclusive as a society, their subtle voice, it's no longer needed, I guess?
Maybe. I don't know. I think it's a power play. I think there's something perennially kind of punk rock about the outsider and the people that feel disconnected. And I don't know. I've been freaking out a little bit. It makes me upset. These are
and
my people.
Also probably overanalyzing the thought. It's probably more to do with just money, because comic books in and of themselves are are a dying market as it is.
Right.
Like,
right.
Just think about what the X-Men did. They no longer necessarily do. And even that concept of, you know, the outsider. The outsider is so much so talked about. There's so much outsider language these days.
Right.
That social class almost doesn't exist anymore, because the outsider is everyone in some way.
Which is actually what we're going to be talking about today.
Yes, it is.
Segway. We need a sound effect of one of those little two-wheeler segways, but I think it's just a battery, right? Like,
yep. Too loud. It'd be...
be like a sound effect of a Prius, which is maybe somebody getting hit by a Prius because they didn't hear it coming.
I mean, like, Segways are the Prius of the bicycle world, right?
I guess so. Yes, they are the Prius of the bicycle world. So here we are. Today, we're talking about this question of why we all feel disconnected. I know it's something that I deal with every day, and I know I have a... Oh, man, I have a deep-seated fear that I'm actually part of making the problem worse in the world, but it is what it is. So, why don't you just tell us what disconnected means to you, why you think this topic of why we all feel disconnected, well, why do we all feel disconnected?
Well, I think there are a lot of reasons for that. The reason that got me started on this topic is technology. So 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 months ago, I saw this YouTube video that was based on a TED Talk about loneliness. And the title of the video is called The Innovation of Loneliness. And it's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes the point that technology has connected us in so many ways, but it's connected us to the point to where we actually don't make real connections. Mm-hmm. We're always on, but we're never really together.
Yeah.
So let me see if I can find some quotes, because I took some quotes from it. I used it for a class for our teenagers.
Yeah, yeah.
So one of the things that it talks about is he has this quote. He has two quotes I'm going to read. He says, "We are collecting friends like stamps. Oof. Not distincting quality versus quantity, and converting the deep meaning of intimacy of friendship by exchanging photos and chat conversations."
So, I know that I've felt that way. At least, okay, I remember. So, right after you and I graduated is when they opened up Facebook to college mm-hmm. students. And so, I don't think I had been away from undergrad 6 months. And I did have this, you know, deep sense of loneliness for those people. And I remember getting on Facebook and looking for them and searching and adding all of those people. And at first, I remember is, oh, cool, I get to connect with so-and-so. But then it was like, huh, I wonder what it'll take to get 4 digits of Facebook friends. It was a switch that flipped for me. Mm-hmm. I remember that really clearly.
Yeah, and you... It's a subtle kind of shift, too, to where the negative is we're losing the ability to look people in the eye and have conversations. We would rather text because it's easier, and we would rather text because it's edited.
Yeah.
Despite, we're editing the wrong things because we're killing grammar. So, you know, good now has a U instead of two O's, and creating this whole new language that I think just makes it look ignorant.
Right.
But you can edit it, whereas in real life, it's not edited. It's very on the fly. It's improvised.
Yeah.
And that's scary. And that's very scary, particularly for people who lack a self-identity. It's scary to risk not editing your life. Because if you don't fit into the certain mold, if you don't say the right thing, if the person gets offended or angry or whatever, they can just leave you and they can drop you. And I feel that our obsession with technology to edit has hindered, in some ways, our ability to be real with people and to feel true acceptance and love.
Yeah, that was probably the thing that jumped out to me most in that video, was the idea. And I do this for a living, which I take people's stuff and I help them edit it to present themselves well online. And So, okay, here's a question about that. You know the story about how I don't know if you know the story or not, but Abraham Lincoln was known for writing letters to his generals on the battlefront. And before he sent a letter, he would write it out and he would put it in his desk drawer, and he wouldn't send it until the next morning, and giving himself time to ruminate and reconsider. How is that different than editing a text message or, editing your profile picture?
Well, even within the handwriting, there's a physicality to the message.
Mm.
There's the act of the writing and the ink and the paper and the motion of the hand, that writing in and of itself is still a very full bodied work. Mm. Whereas texting is not, it just strikes me as a physically different activity. You use two fingers, whereas with your hand, you're using your whole hand. You're using all of your fingers.
Right.
You're
using your arm. Comes through in the actual.
Yeah.
How it looks.
And there's a style that everyone's writing is unique. Whereas text, it's all very much mechanic and the same. And sure, maybe it's different emojis depending on what package you got.
Right.
And okay, maybe you used some cool fonts, but it's the lack of physicality, I think, that is increasing our ability to feel disconnected, because we are inherently physical beings, and we're quickly running into a world that is only half of ourselves. It's only our mind. It's only our unseen souls, I guess.
Yeah.
And that's deluding us a little bit.
Yeah.
That this is a better way to be, when it's in fact not. You know, I think it's more dangerous because it's morally questionable. It invites, different ways of morality. Like, think about video games. I wanted to write a philosophical paper in grad school on the for my ethics class on the moral problems that arise in playing World of Warcraft. Is stealing World of Warcraft really all that wrong? Since you're not actually stealing a real object, you know, you're stealing code and bits that exist in a computer, but they don't exist in real life. And what makes that a bad thing, a moral thing or an immoral thing?
Yeah.
And just like the morality of trolling and messing with people in video games, like that's a disconnected world right there.
Yeah. And it's getting to be a big problem.
It is, but at the same time, how do I want to put this? It's disconnecting, but we can tell that, but it's frustrating us at the same time. Just in playing like World of Warcraft or playing League of Legends, and I played this for like 5 years without even realizing it, and just how annoyed I would get at people and how frustrated. Mm-hmm. And then you read comments and blogs and people talk about, like, League of Legends has millions of people who play it. And it's well known that most of the people who play this game across the board are mean-spirited within the game itself.
Hmm.
They do things to mess with people. And then they say, well, it's just a game, but it's not. I mean, it is a game, but it's still affecting the time and the energy of the other people playing the game. But because it's an avatar, we can disconnect from that moment and feel like we're not really doing any harm to anybody.
Right. Did you see that video? This was years ago, but there was a video where apparently someone IRL, someone in real life had been a part of what do they call it in World of Warcraft, a clan or something like that.
You talking about the guild where the person died and they did a funeral?
They did a funeral for him in World of Warcraft.
Yeah.
So he dies in real life. His clan or whatever does a funeral for him in World of Warcraft. And you see all the little avatars like gathered around something and they were sharing whatever. And then some other, did they call them clans, whatever they call it. You know, some other clan decides to take that moment to raid them because they're all distracted.
Yeah.
It brought out all these mixed feelings in me, because on one level I was like, that is hilarious, you know?
Yeah.
Like, here we are taking this video game so seriously, and these people who decided to steal in this moment were like not taking the game that seriously, and they were like taking advantage of the situation. But on the other hand, you had in a very tangible way,
mm-hmm.
not taking life seriously. Like, the sanctity of life was being violated in this, like, or the value of it. And
you laugh at it, but you realize that first of all, they're called guilds.
Sorry.
It's okay. And in a guild, at least back in the day when I was playing in a guild, if you remembered, like, in that year right after college, I spent hours with those people, mm-hmm. talking about life, making mm-hmm. memories with them. And in that system, you make friends. I had buddies that visited other people, and they were close friends, and they never met until that one moment, and it was like they were best buds.
Yeah.
Because you spend so much time together. And so that scenario you mentioned brings out that connected, disconnected thing where...
Right.
There's a human element to it, but because it's a video game avatar, mm-hmm. we can easily gloss over it. And the same is true for text messaging, or internet sites, or Twitter, or Instagram, or the Facebooks. That there's a wall of separation, and one of the reasons why we feel disconnected in society mm-hmm. is because we want to live within that world where that wall exists, because it makes us feel safe. But at the same time, it makes us feel alone.
Yeah. So it's real for sure. In some ways, it's very real, but it's not full.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You said you had another quote.
Oh, the other quote. Instead of pursuing friendships, we're obsessed with hours of personal promotion.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, think about all those magazines that we've, well, all those, I think I've read two, but there's two studies that I read about Facebook actually making people more depressed.
Sure.
Because in a world where life is edited, many people choose to only show their good moments. So you sit on Facebook and you know, you're at work and you're like, oh, well, I'm going to go to Facebook because I've got, you know, 30 seconds to kill, and you see so-and-so super awesome vacation extraordinaire, and it's like, didn't so-and-so mm-hmm. just literally take a vacation like 2 weeks ago, and I never take a vacation, and like, I have a buddy I follow
the
on Instagram.
Jealousness.
And I swear, like, he's a youth minister, and I swear he takes a vacation every month, which is great. I just don't understand how I could do that. How do I get to live in that world
right.
where I have the money and the time to just be gone for 3 days?
Mm-hmm.
But it's stuff like that. There's the people who only post the super positive things that make you have an unrealistic view of their life. And then there are the people that just post the negative things, and they say, I'm just venting. This is just me
right.
expressing myself. If you don't want to read it, you don't have to. It's like, yeah, except it's on my news feed and my eye catches it. And then you see like 352 comments, like, well, I totally want to read this because I'm human and I get drawn into that kind of stuff.
Serotonin addict.
We, going back to the quote, mm-hmm. we spend, I guess there's that fine line, that weird line between sharing life
mm-hmm.
and look at me. You know?
Right. And there's I don't know if I'm not going to say it because I don't want to give spoilers, but there's an amazing line at the very end of the video about how humanity, what it means to be human is redefined by sharing. And I do remember, because I live in this world, you know, so much of my day job involves social media. There was this moment where it did change about 2 years ago, when Facebook was feeling increasing competition from Instagram and Twitter, and they changed the newsfeed where it was, instead of like mostly status updates from your friends, it was mostly shares. And so suddenly, like, your ability to curate coolness either in your own life or in the world around you suddenly became the primary thing that you were communicating. And it was kind of like the end of the actual connecting in my sense. And I still love social media and use it. And I don't think this is all about social media. You know, Thoreau, almost 100 years ago, said that men lead lives of quiet desperation. So I think that we're not necessarily talking about something new, but we are talking about something that is amplified by technology. Yes. And
if you think about, we're talking about being disconnected.
Mm-hmm.
Even think about how last night was the State of the Union.
Mm-hmm.
Hashtag.
So and, too.
So too. There it is. I watched the State of the Union last night because it was on, and there's that. And it was very interesting to me to follow Twitter and to see the back and forth on both sides and how, reflecting on the current political waters of our nation right now, it's very venomous.
It's
like the liberals, from the conservative point of view, are delivering our nation to the land of the heathen and destroying American values. And to the liberals, the conservatives, from the liberals' point of view, their oppressive regime that is squashing people's identity. And and it's one thing to say, I disagree with that person.
Right.
Why? It's another thing to say, I disagree with that person. They're the devil.
Yeah.
We've moved, it feels like, as a society, away from good debate with good rhetoric into personal attacks that is very divisive. And I think a lot of it is because of this disconnection through our technology, that we don't have to see people, look them in the eye, and recognize inherently that they're human. We just see type on the screen, and so we begin to attack that avatar.
Yeah, and I don't want to get lost on politics, but something I've heard a number of times, I actually earlier today was talking about this with a friend of mine who used to be a staffer up in D.C., and just talked about how he keeps in touch with his friends that are still there and how it's gone downhill. And something that you hear again and again is that back in the day, when transportation was more complicated and expensive, you bought a house when you, ran for Congress or whatever. You bought a house in D.C. and you lived there and you brought your family there and your kids went to school there. And today, people are in, D.C. 3 or 4 days a week, sleeping in their office, working 20-hour days, and then flying home back to their states for the weekends. And what that does is that takes away that time where people were, sitting around having food together, having drinks together, having their kids go to the same schools and seeing people at school functions and things like that. And it's just, what you're describing is a really tangible thing that we're all dealing with because of this disconnect. Well, this is where we may step on some toes, if anyone besides my mom and Paul Cartwright are listening. But
shout out, DC.
Okay, so I'll let you go first on this. I'll share my own thoughts as well. Where do you see this, like, specifically? So you work in youth ministry. So where do you see loneliness in youth ministry? You know, we talked about the disconnection, but, the kind of result being loneliness, like, what's that look like with your kids?
I think it just looks like being a teenager. I think teenagers who are hypersensitive because they're developing abstract thought and developing emotions and hormones and doing everything, on some level, they all feel lonely. And they all feel not just not just alone, but disconnected.
Right.
And I think this works itself out in a number of ways. You can, the classic example is you sit a couch, and this happens on the daily with my teenagers. Mm-hmm. There's a couch, there's three teenagers on it, and they're all on their phones, and they're all doing 10 different things. So they're together, but they're not.
Right.
So they're texting, but they're not. But they're not conversating. and they're together with each other, and they're like, oh, we're hanging out. And it's like, you're not even interacting with each other. And like, you're literally right there. Yeah. You're not even playing a game together. You're all doing like three different things. And it's just this myth, I think, that multitasking makes us a better person.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe some multitasking is good, but multitasking relationships is not so good. There was a Sprint commercial 4 or 5 years ago that I remember watching, where the person had they were like carrying their groceries, and then they had like four miniature versions of themselves, like helping carry their groceries, and they were like exercising, like four versions of themselves exercising. So the point of the commercial was that this new faster Sprint's whatever data plan was mm-hmm. was going to make them able to be more connected and to
four
do
times as much.
Yeah. But I remember listening to, I think it was Shane Hipps say, there's a lie in every commercial, and the lie for this commercial is that that person stays regular sized. That when you spread yourself out,
yeah,
you are sharing more of yourself, and you're spending more time focusing. Like, there are studies on the brain where you mm-hmm. spend more time focusing on the act of focusing than you are actually focusing on the task at hand.
Wow. Yeah.
So it's harder to focus on God because you're focusing on 10 other things, and you don't know, mm-hmm. your brain has in some ways lost the ability to just have a singular focus. And so you're having to refocus on, how do I just stay quiet in this moment? How do I stay still in this moment? And maybe I'm not talking so much about loneliness.
Yeah.
Cause I feel like I talked about that in Hurt, but I'm going to address just more the idea of disconnected and how it works itself out in our lives. Yeah. And that's one way I see this disconnectedness expressing itself, that teenagers don't look at each other in the eye as much as mm-hmm. they used to. They have trouble making face-to-face conversations more across the board, not just some, like across the board. This feels to be my experience. And you think about this. When we were kids, you never had like a tangible way of knowing who did and who didn't pay attention to you, like they do now with Instagram and Facebook and Twitter.
You didn't like my photo.
Yeah, because now you have a quantitative measuring stick.
Yeah,
I have
yeah.
130 likes. I have 80 likes. I have 66 likes. And like, we see this with teenagers who are posting pictures and they're saying, hashtag get me 60 likes, or hashtag get me 40 likes, or, you know, hashtag I need someone to tell me that I'm good about myself. And all of that, I think, relates to the fact that they're disconnected from who they are. Mm-hmm. It's not just normal teen angst. It's teen angst heightened by a technology that is equipping them for not connecting with themselves.
Yeah.
Does any of that make sense?
Yeah. Well, so what I hear you saying is that you see kids that don't value interacting, and they miss out on relationships. They miss out on that skill set that also affects their relationship with God. Relationship gets replaced with currency is really what I heard you saying.
They miss out on real relationships.
Yeah.
So they have,
which by definition can't be based, the difference between a, you know, it's a relational a relationship and a transaction is, you know, you're not buying this from someone, you're giving it to someone because you value them, you enjoy them.
And they're fooling themselves into thinking they're closer than they are, which then leads them had this conversation with my team a few weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
About how they think they're closer to people, and so they share themselves, and that person kind of rejects them,
mm-hmm.
and they're surprised, because they've created this false connection, this illusion that they were closer, and that then in turn is internalized as a deeper sense of abandonment, because they kind of set themselves up for that. Is that, you get what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I totally do. So I'll put myself out there in a really awkward way. Not right now, not anymore, but there was a season in my life that I experimented with online dating. And I signed up for a certain service, and I was sharing this with a coworker. I was telling him, yeah, I signed up for such and such. I may be going out with so-and-so tonight. And my coworker grabs me by the shoulder and says, get off now, stop, don't do it. And I'm like, why? Like, I mean, they seem like reasonable human beings, nice looking girl. And she says, you know that feeling of being rejected? I'm like, sure. Well, let's say that in, you know, face-to-face life, that happens once every couple of months. I'm like, okay. You've just upped your opportunity to be rejected thousands of times. You have the opportunity to be rejected a couple of dozen times every day, a couple of times an hour. And that takes a toll. And maybe that's more... I would go as far as saying that statement could apply to the internet and social media in general. That's not a statement about just online dating. We're always putting ourselves out there in life. And that includes social media. And yeah, this does set up an opportunity for more and more transactions that can be hurtful. So we're kind of showing our age here. I don't know. I'd be fascinated if we had a couple of millennials on here to share their opinion of it. But
yeah.
I'll tell you a few things that I've learned. And I'm going to be kind of speaking a little bit out of my backside here because I don't know specifics of things like this. But there is a real neurological component to connecting.
Mm-hmm.
So, for instance, it's really hard. So we have different parts of our brain. And, they talk about the reptile brain, which is more the fight or flight side of our brain. And then they talk about, how we've got our prefrontal cortex and all of these other things. And if you do not initiate an interaction in a way that makes the other person feel comfortable, they're stuck in fight or flight mode. So we've all had this experience, right, where you walk up to somebody or you know somebody who's just a little overwhelming. It's like the old... Will Ferrell bit on Saturday Night Live about the guy who can't control this volume of his voice. You know, why does that bother us? Well, he's always overwhelming us. And it always, that loud noise drives us back into fight or flight mode. It's freaking us out. So on the other hand, we've all had those really special people in our lives who have some seemingly magical capacity to make you feel special as soon as you talk to them. Like, you know, that person who makes you feel like the only person in the room. And what are they doing? You know, they're looking you in the eye. Maybe they'll tell you something they appreciate about you. Mm-hmm. And so immediately you're going from a fear-based interaction to a appreciation-based interaction. Like, I want to talk to this person because they've already shown me that I can feel comfortable with them. And literally, you can watch this in an MRI. You know, it goes from the back of our brain to the front of our brain, where we're interacting based on logic. Another thing before, and I don't want to get too much in this because I don't really know what I'm talking about, but a good storyteller.
How has that ever stopped us before?
Right. I mean, we have a whole podcast based on thinking we know what we're talking about. A good storyteller totally engages your brain. there is this kind of idea in neuroscience that your brain can't tell the difference between a memory and the present. It engages the same part of your brain. So a good storyteller literally can make you feel like you are there. They're providing context. They're engaging the senses just in their capacity to tell a story. And it is in those moments.
Is it a memory, or is it that a brain can't recognize fantasy and reality?
You know, that, I mean, it's probably similar. I'm sure it's the same thing. The same thing. But what I'm getting at is, it's those moments when we feel connected. You know, I feel connected to a truly great storyteller. Like I got to see a comedian, Mike Birbiglia, who doesn't really do stand-up. He does one-man shows. And you feel like you're there with him and wherever, you know. And why do you feel connected? Well, because it's totally engaging your brain. And that's not something that can necessarily happen in a blog or a Facebook post or something like that. So, yeah, there's a neurological component. But I'm going to go as far as saying, and this is where I'll probably step on some toes, I think there is a theological mandate for us to be a connected people.
Mm-hmm.
I think there is a theological mandate for us to be a connected people. And I would even go as far as saying, and I know there's an irony of us saying this on a podcast, but I would go as far as saying that I'm not sure that a disconnected fan base or a disconnected group of people can be called a church. Like, I think and this is what I'm basing this all on, is the idea that resurrection is what makes it. Resurrection is the point of the story of the gospel, but the mode, the method of the story of the gospel is incarnation. There is no Easter without Christmas. And before we are Easter people, we have to be Christmas people. And so this is our claim, is that there is an infinite, almighty, eternal, divine, and that divine has chosen to be with people, has chosen to connect. And so then that has to be the method of everything we do. And so if we are the people of the incarnated divine, then everything we have to do has to be incarnated. And there are a lot of things that are called church that I would have to say, you have come up with an innovative way to deliver content, religious content, thoughtful, engaging religious content. But I'm not ready to call that church. Because you can't connect in the way that Jesus connected. And I don't want to name names. And, I learn from these people and I enjoy their podcasts. But if you're not with each other, I'm not sure you can call that church. That doesn't make it bad.
Yeah.
I'm just not sure it's the same thing the church is. So we'll transition here into talking to kind of how we're trying to address this in our own ministries. When we started Austin Mustard Seed, we called my role community developer. And a little backstory of that is I was way disconnected before social media. Like, Kyle and I are just a little too old to be millennials. But man, I was an awkward kid who had a hard time connecting my whole life. And I'm telling all the embarrassing stories about myself. Kyle, I don't know if you remember this, but when we went to college together, so we went to college in rural Arkansas, and the closest thing, where the closest city where you could go to watch a movie or go out on a date or anything was an hour away. So you had this hour-long ride. And I remember my freshman year, after three or four super awkward Friday night drives to the big city, that I went into the computer lab. Have I ever told you this story, Kyle?
I don't think so. I don't remember this story.
I went into the computer lab and I just sat down. I opened Microsoft Word and I started writing questions. Like, would you ever questions? Like, you're stuck on a desert island. Would you ever, what would you take with you? What's your favorite ice cream? What animal best describes your personality? I wrote like 100 of these questions and I typed them up. I printed them up in type 8 font, as small as I could get them and still read it. I folded it up and I put it in my wallet. And for months, for probably the rest of that whole year, whenever I'd get stuck on that hour-long car drive to Little Rock, I would pull out my wallet. I'd pull out this piece of paper and I would say, hey guys, you know, cause I felt super awkward. I didn't know how to connect with people. I didn't know how to talk to people. So I would pull out my cheat sheet of questions. Hey, I have a question for you. What's your favorite animal and why? You know, and like at first it was always super awkward. And then people would kind of loosen up. And, you know, by the time we had driven for an hour and actually talked to each other and had these questions, it was kind of fun. And now it was a crutch, but it was the best I could come up with as 19-year-old Chris. And
actually pretty, you know, we do something similar to that in youth ministry. So looks like it worked out pretty well because it just gets people talking.
Right. Well, yeah, exactly. And, but what that did, and the reason I tell that story is what that did for me, it was kind of ignite this desire to be like, to kind of overcome my own shyness and awkwardness by helping other people connect. And that's really been my passion in ministry ever since. And I really believe there's a pastor up in DC who's a part of our church network, and named Aaron Graham. And I remember him saying that we have to get over this myth that spiritual transformation happens individually.
Mm, yeah.
We are only going to become more like Christ as we're doing it together as a community. It's not something I don't become more like Christ. We become more like Christ.
That's a really good point to make.
Yeah. And so that's, was that?
I think in terms of our specific, or at least my specific tribe, mm-hmm. of the Christian faith, and yours too to some extent, it's always bothered me when people say we just need to get back to the Bible and not read other books. And it's like, that's a very individualistic mindset, because books are the voice of the community throughout the world.
Right.
So I feel like that kind of just this, you know, I can just read the Bible myself is definitely
right.
You know, you're saying.
Right. It's a disconnected approach to spiritual growth.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, so for me, you know, my passion is to create a sense of community where spiritual development and service can happen. And so, you know, we're about a year and a half in, and we really err on the side of being, of socializing. I mean, just 2 weeks ago. So for one thing, like, we have a Sunday lunch. It's not mandatory, but we do it every Sunday. There isn't 52 weeks out of the year. We go and have lunch together as soon as our liturgy is over. And then about, you know, 4 or 5 times a year within that time, we do something a little more special. Just 3 weeks ago, we did, bowling for lunch. You know, spent 3 or 4 hours bowling. Our all-time best was about a year ago when we did a kickball picnic as our Sunday lunch, which was super awesome. And we do a weekly meetup at a local pub. We have small groups that meet together. We end our liturgy every Sunday by saying, go in peace, live the church, see you throughout the week. Like, we want to set that expectation. We are people of peace. We are a church, and we set this expectation. So people, if they attend Mustard Seed twice and they don't get anything else, they remember that, go in peace, live the church, see you throughout the week. They get that expectation. Every couple of months, we get together, everyone who's a small group leader, or actually we do anyone who's involved in a small group at all. And right now we're a small church, so it's a pretty high percentage, which is great. I hope we can keep that. And we don't do training. We do, you'll appreciate this, Kyle. We do a scrimmage. And I don't know much about sport ball, but what I do know is that a scrimmage is basically the idea that you practice what, like you play, that it's basically you're having a game, but it doesn't count. You're going to get out there and do everything you would do in a real game. And so we have a scrimmage coming up this Sunday, and the focus of this scrimmage is to destigmatize asking other people to be our friend. It is so awkward, because here's the thing: as you get older and you're not like on a campus every day interacting with people, you're not going to school every day, you're stuck in an office. Like me today, I was alone in the house working for like the last 10 hours. So, and that happens to me a few days a week, and everybody has that increasingly in our culture. And so it's harder to make friends. And then you come to church and Sunday, it's hard to connect with people because we lose that skill set. And, you know, for people who don't get married young, it becomes increasingly hard to meet people, and you forget how to interact with people, and going on dates becomes unnecessarily awkward because it's like you've lost this muscle set. And it's just hard to even interact with people of your same gender. You just want some friends. I just need some more dude friends because Kyle's all the way out in California. But like I personally, when I'm being my most honest, I find it so hard I'm still that shy kid with 100 questions in his wallet. Like I find it so hard to get other guys to hang out with. Like that is more scary to me than asking out a girl ever is. And so what we're going to do, and I hope I'm not projecting too much on my congregation, but I want to destigmatize that ask. And this happened because we were at the pub a few months back, and I saw one lady who had visited our church about 3 times say to the other lady, you know, hey, I'm new in town. It's been a really hard transition. I could just really use a friend. Yeah, it's been really hard. And the other girl looks at her and says, you know what? I could use a friend too. You want to hang out and be friends? Like I am sitting next to this. And it's like, you know, we did this when we were 6 years old, you know, running around on our bicycles or whatever, yeah, and be like, hey, be my friend, you know? And like, at some point that became like something we're too cool to do. But the need doesn't go away because our life changes and our friend and our access to people change, and we always need to be. And so I would go as far as calling this discipleship. I would say learning how to interact and be friends is a necessary step for us to talk about Jesus and to be shaped into Jesus people. We just have to be people that can be around each other in order to be Christian people who can be around each other. And so it's weird, you know, but that's what we're going to do. We're going to have this scrimmage. And I wrote a couple of super cheesy scripts based on that conversation that we had for people to interact and say, hey, you want to hang out sometime? And I don't know. I hope people laugh. I hope it feels kind of silly. But I also hope people feel permission to ask somebody to hang out. Because the hope is that as they're spending time together, that the Holy Spirit meets them there, and that they together become more like Jesus. So that's how we're addressing it. It's super close to my heart, because I'm still that lonely, awkward kid with 100 questions in his wallet. But I think hopefully it's something that can be a blessing to others. And, yeah. And I'm excited to see the kind of community that develops out of it.
Yeah, me too. I think it'd be cool.
What do you guys do to deal with disconnection in your ministry?
One, I encourage students to get off their phones when we are together, which also requires me to get off my phone, which
it's kind of
easier said than done. The big push I had for this year was whenever a student has an activity, I've always gone. So I go to basketball games, I go to plays and bar concerts. And now I tell other people I tell our students, hey, so-and-so is doing this. Let's go cheer them on.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's probably one of the intentional things we do. The biggest intentional thing that we've done ever since I got here was made sure that we had a meal together when we meet on Sunday nights. I think life happens around the dinner table. I think we make great memories around the dinner table. I think this has always been true. This is a very basic human truth that the people you eat with are the people you trust. And there's something about sharing a meal that is inherently trusting. And encouraging the kids to interact. And I'm a big stickler on this. We sit at a big white table and everyone sits there.
Yeah.
And nobody is allowed to nobody's allowed to sit anywhere else in our fellowship hall. They all sit around the table. And we had this one kid who was staunchly opposed to this. Like, he did not want to sit with everybody. And it wasn't because the kid was super shy. I mean, he was quiet, but I don't think it made him uncomfortable. And after a couple of weeks of just, you know, letting him try, you know, like, understanding and not forcing him into it, I finally said, all right, dude, you've been coming here a month. 2 months. Actually, at this point, you've been coming like 3 months. It's like, all right. So either you come to us or we're coming to you. And he stayed in his seat. And so I moved the giant white table over to him. And we all sat around where he was sitting.
Wow.
Because community is not optional in my youth group.
Right.
I can't.
How'd that go over?
I can't make them interact. I mean, you know, we all had a laugh about it. And he stopped sitting at the pew. He sat with the rest of us. For the time that he was with us.
Cool.
So it was good. So, yeah. And we talk about it. We talk about what it's like to be lonely. We talk about what it's like to feel betrayed, to just try to normalize experiences. That everybody goes through the same things. And while you feel like you're the only one going through it, you're actually not. You may not interpret it like everyone else, but you're still going on the journey. And there are others alongside you.
Yeah.
And it's important to recognize that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I hope this is something we continue to talk about because I don't think the problem is going away. And I think that I'd be curious as people listen to this, if you want to send us an email or a message on Facebook. I would love to hear what you guys have done in your personal life or if you're in ministry to kind of destigmatize the sense of connection and make it easier for people to do that.
I'll take it one step further, and my phone number is 925-759-5444. Instead of texting or emailing me, I would challenge you to call me. Because I would love to hear ideas, and I would love to hear voices.
All right. I love that idea. I'll let you do that.
And then I'll give you Chris's phone number. You can call him, too.
Awesome. All right. Well, you got anything else?
No, I'm good. Your beard's looking nice.
Thank you. I trimmed it yesterday. I was really scared of trimming it, so I watched a series of How to Trim Your Beard videos. It's the way that we disconnect. It's the way we learn in a disconnected world. But I'm pretty happy with how it came out.
Yeah, it looks nice. Have I ever told you the story about how Paul Cartwright was the guy who taught me how to shave with like a non-electric razor?
Oh, man. That's amazing. Did you cut yourself?
Most kids have that memory with their dad. Mine is with Paul.
He's like the dad we never asked for. I'm so glad we got it.
Yeah. We didn't know we needed, but we're really glad in retrospect.
Thanks, Daddy Paul. Oh, man. All right. Well, for Tier Graf and Glumroth, I am Chris Morton. And
I'm Kyle Stapp.
And thanks for...
Still have a tagline.
I think that might be our tagline. And we're looking for a tagline. go out and connect with someone.
Yeah, do that.
See ya.
See ya.